Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Man, it's always more fun to do these shows after a successful hunt, Dave.
Yes, it is. Upbeat.
Quick shout out to Legacy Sports International. I always say home of the Howa Superlight and now the Superlight Plus, the 4.3-pound version, but I wanted to use them right off the bat. You got it done with a Howa 1500 in 308, correct?
Correct.
We put our money where our mouth is, use the sponsor products in the field. This episode, let's talk a little bit about the hunt. You had an any legal weapon tag, which how many times we've harped on this, I don't know. I still have people that say, is that a rifle tag? It is.
Yeah, that is the only classification that allows you to hunt with a rifle.
Right.
But it also allows you to hunt with a muzzleloader, which we carried. We carried the muzzleloader, but we'll
get into that.
We'll get into that a little later. And you can also harvest with bow and arrow. You can use basically any legal weapon.
However, not crossbow?
No. Okay. Well, I take that back. I would have to look into that. I think you might be able to use a crossbow, but don't quote me on that yet.
All right, so don't go out and start killing stuff with a crossbow, folks.
Any legal weapon. Forever, it's been considered the rifle tag.
Which is how everybody refers to it.
Right, but you can use anything that's legal.
And, yeah. I don't have any interest in crossbows, but I will say you brought a bow, a muzzleloader, and a rifle.
And a rifle.
As we came down to crunch time in the red zone, to use a football analogy, and we were 109 yards from the antelope you killed, we only had a rifle, though.
Yes, through the excitement of the process, we left the muzzleloader on the front of the UTV.
Yeah.
Yeah. In all reality, we came up on the ridge. You said, hold on, stop right here. Let's go to these rocks and see if we can see where they are so we know how to start the
process.
Stalk,
yeah.
You know, and we got to that chunk of rocks, which was like 200 yards from the UTV. And we saw an opportunity like, oh, dude, look, the backside of this is this nice little flat spot. We can kind of cruise along it. And our brains just went straight into hunt, hunt, hunt mode.
Yep.
And it just...
The muzzleloader was loaded back at the UTV.
Could have shot it with the muzzleloader or the rifle, which we used the rifle, and then got up on the rest of them at 60 yards. Could have shot them with the bow, but
we had options.
We had options, and we had weapons.
Let's back up from the actual, we'll get to the kill, the excitement in a minute. So you had 067, 068.
Yep.
It's a unit I'm familiar with. There's a couple distinct areas where antelope like to hang out. However, as we found when we were out there, they're just spread out all over. And contrary to what I have seen in years past, there was no rhyme or reason to where we found them.
No.
Generally speaking, antelope this time of year, it was hot, man.
Yeah.
You would think some of those areas we keyed in on, there was water, there was plenty of cover.
Lots of feed.
Everything you would think would hold antelope, and we didn't find them there.
Right. It was kind of crazy. That was one of those things that, I wonder how other hunters that are listening now and deal with some of that frustration you have when...
You were getting a little frustrated,
man,
by it, yeah.
I mean, I was like, what in the world? You're in this prime area. You know the area holds just a lot of antelope.
Yep.
And we're sitting up there and we're glassing these humongous flats and, you know, rolling hills. Granted, they could be 10 feet on the other side of one of those little rolls, you know, little...
You're never going to see them.
You'll never see them. And it was just miles of just open country, spotting scope and everything. And we're like, what, aliens come down and take them all? What's the deal?
But we found antelope.
Yeah, we found them.
Every day.
We saw them every day, which was great. And we saw a couple really nice antelope that we kind of keyed up on, which one of them was the one we harvested. I started getting a little frustrated, even though it was opening day, but we'd been there for 2 days prior, but
there was that 30
something years of hunting, and you still kind of get
there. Where are they?
What's the deal? So
Again, going back to that, finding them in areas you wouldn't expect, one of the better bucks we saw was like up on top of a ridge line.
Yeah.
At the, that would be, I guess, the eastern side of the unit. We're scouting along creeks and water pockets. There's green feed everywhere.
Oh, everywhere.
And the one really good buck we found over in that area was up on a ridge line.
Yeah.
By himself.
Just in some questionable habitat. Just
yes.
Rocky, nasty. When we got over in that area, we couldn't find water to save our...
No.
Granted, they can travel quite some distances, but you're like, man, what are you doing here?
Why are you there?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's hunting in general. The beauty was, like we were talking up on the mountain, was like when you've got this point of this dead period where you're just glassing and glassing and glassing,
yeah.
not seeing anything and just kind of letting your mind race a little bit. But then 2 seconds later, you're like, got him. And then
yeah.
everything changes. Your mood changes, everything changes. And then it's like the hunt is on and you're just get into the focus, which is what we did. We turned around and you decided to peek up where we had seen that buck 2 days prior. And you're like, oh,
there's right there.
He's right there. Same spot. And that was it.
That's the one you killed. And he was had some does with him,
yeah,
which
three.
Was also unique because every other big buck we found was
solo.
So completely solo.
Yeah. Small bucks. We saw the one.
Chasing
had 12 does with him, and he was just a little thing, but you know he's gonna get his butt kicked here
soon
the next couple days. And
yeah, they were starting to go into heat. We
yeah.
watched
oh, just yeah
we lost that one really big buck that was yeah. with them because there were two bucks at one point chasing, and it was like full-blown National Geographic, kicking
yeah.
up dust, chasing does around.
Yeah.
So there were some does going into heat.
Right.
This is about the time they all should be going into heat. I don't know. We got it done on opening day.
Yeah, we didn't. After that, we didn't have to worry about it anymore.
No,
they can go
no.
into heat however they like now.
I'd be curious if people listening, if you have tips and tricks for picking apart that big country, text us 775-884-9910. You get into habits, right? Opening day, we're looking. We found that one. We'll go into that story in a second. Looking at some of those draws and everything, the only thing I know to do is get different angles on stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's all I know. Yeah.
I don't know if there's...
change your position.
Yeah, change, look up the draw, you know. But if you had shot your antelope and it had decided to go west, it was only 100 yards from... some of the steepest, gnarliest terrain in that unit.
Yeah.
So going back to having the rifle, boy, I was glad you did. Coming up on the show, I also want to get into a little bit of that. I call it an insurance shot. I don't know
oh,
what the
yeah.
general consensus on those is. I had you put an insurance shot into it because
yeah.
its head was up. You know, I know some guys frown upon that. If they know the first shot was good, they're just going to let the animal expire. I had that in the back of my mind after you dropped it with its head up. I thought, man, if it goes over that cliff
or shoots straight down that canyon
or down the canyon, boy, we are in trouble.
Yeah.
So you put a second shot into it. Turns out once we cleaned it, totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
However, it's that thing I have where it's like, if it's there and it's not 100% dead yet, and not doing the death kick or anything, but just like head up, I thought, man, anchor it right there so we don't get ourselves in a pickle.
Yeah.
So we'll debate the ethics of that coming up. We'll also get into shot placement, I guess.
One thing I wanted to get into was I'm not a rifle
yeah,
hunter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it was different for me to have so many different options in position and shooting. You know, when we sighted the guns in, we were on a bench.
Right.
I mean, awesome. When you're in the field, I realized how different it is from archery. Because archery, from the belt up, no matter what, you're on your knees, you're standing up, whatever.
Doesn't change.
It doesn't really change much. But when you're shooting with a rifle, everything changes.
Offhand, off a tripod.
On your knees, sitting. Leaning on a tree. I mean, there's so many different variables. And that did kind of panic me when we were just standing up in the flat open nothingness, just going, where's my bench, man? Where's my bench?
I need my chair. Yeah, I need my little bag.
I need the sandbags. I need.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it is dramatically different. And yeah, we can cover some of that stuff, offhand shooting positions, different tips and tricks for shooting, like with a spotting scope tripod. Yeah, we'll cover the entire hunt from start to finish. Coming up next segment, I want to get into that opening day when we pushed that really good buck.
Yeah, that real big boy. Yeah.
Someone better than me probably has a definitive, you know, stop at this point. I just have that thing where it's like, okay, go until you get an angle, get a shot on them. At some point, they're going to slip up and they're going to let you in that safety bubble unless terrain dictates let up, which happened with us.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
We are back here on Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Shout out to Battle Born Tree Service. For hunters, by hunters. These guys are fantastic. If you have an issue with a tree, call these guys. Again, Battle Born Tree Service. Let them take care of it so that you can just sit on the porch and have a drink.
And not bust yourself up before hunting.
Yes, exactly. Not tea kettle off of a ladder with a chainsaw.
Before we get into some of the awkward shooting positions you find yourself in hunting with a rifle, opening day, do you want to set the scene? You found that buck.
Yeah. We had just checked out a bull that we had seen another really nice antelope go into for the last 2 days.
Yes.
And of course, opening morning, nowhere to be seen. So we transitioned to go down into the flats, the lower country, because we had seen a few animals out there cruising along, and we just see this fantastic,
silhouette. Yeah.
Oh man, fantastic antelope, just sitting in the middle of the flat, just kind of feeding and just doing its thing. And we made a choice to try to go for it.
Yep.
He was like 700 and something yards.
I think when we initially saw him, he was at 4 and chain.
You know, my limited shooting experience, and I was like, well, let's see if we can get to 300. To be honest, that was the closest we got the entire time.
Yes.
Looking back on it, I'm thinking I probably should have tried. You know, he was feeding, and we thought, well, I mean, it's 100 yards. We can do that. And we had the decoy that...
Thanks, Pat.
Yeah, that Pat gave us, which we thought was cool. And it kind of worked, I think. So we tried sneaking in another 100 yards on him, and he obviously pinned us right off the get-go. After that, no matter what we did, we couldn't get within 800 yards of that guy.
Yes.
It was like he had a built-in rangefinder. We would be creeping along, hitting some of those cuts in the rolling hills where he didn't see us. But when we'd pop up, he'd be 800 yards away.
Yeah.
Every time.
Looking back, so he didn't bolt.
No,
which I think credit to the decoy.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that decoy kept him, but you're absolutely right. They have that weird, I'll call it like a safety bubble. If they're kind of interested or whatever, they'll stop and watch. They know kind of that range of like, okay, they're no threat to me.
Yeah.
How they know that you had not practiced a 450, I don't know. And here's why we bring this up. It's kind of that two schools of thought. Like, okay, if they know you're there and they're watching you, don't pressure them, come back for a better opportunity. Well, because we had not found that good buck in that bowl, I thought, man, this might be our opportunity. Let's go for it. We bumped him 4 times?
Oh, at least 4 or 5 times that he would just, and he, like you said, he'd just walk off and then he'd start feeding again. We'd pop up and he'd be.
He would have moved.
He moved.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it was probably a good 4 or 5 times. And we just kept saying, okay.
He's going to go here. Okay. We're going to do this.
Yep. Yeah. And he generally not do what we were thinking he was. But, I mean, yeah, we were mile and a half later.
Yeah.
You know, and he just kept that distance between us.
Well, the terrain dictated in that case.
He left the flat and he just went right up that canyon and then he.
And it wasn't until we made it to the top of that knob where we thought, okay, we're going to be looking down at him. And we realized there were two or three more draws in between us and where he had gone. But I'd be interested to hear for people listening out there, you know, what's your call in those cases with antelope? Do you pressure them or try to make something happen? I'll call it getting aggressive, which is just my personality.
Yeah, when you've got a really, really good buck that you've got spotted, you know where he is. Yeah, do you stick with it? Do you just like, okay, well, let's just hunker down and wait till he pops out again? Or do we just keep creeping along until we spot him again? Or do you pull back and say, okay,
I know where he's at.
I know where he's at. Let's give him some time to kind of get back into his relaxed groove and then get back on him. That's generally what I've done with archery. If something's got me, I'll generally back out, get to a point where I can just observe them till they quit staring at me or trying to find me.
Right.
And they get back into that comfort zone of feeding or trying to find a bed or something. And then I'll put number two stalk on them and figure out how to approach them. Archery's a lot different, though. I mean, you've got to get within 70 yards of the animal, where rifle hunters can punch it out there a ways. I mean, me, 300, 350 for me is comfortable with the rifle right now.
Yeah.
Where online watching some of these folks with their pictures and stuff, and they're poking these things at 600, 680.
Well, I would point out even Jim Irwin, who we had on the show, and I re-aired the episode last week. He just killed a really nice antelope.
Yeah, really nice.
So Jim's a guy capable out to 2,000 and beyond, and Jim took his at 340. I have that thing with hunting, like, if you're good to 400, you will kill stuff all day long. And I'm not saying don't shoot out to 2,000 yards if you have the space. You know, if you can hit 1,600 yards all day long, well, 400's a chip shot. But I think generally for rifle hunting, you should be able to get within 400, 400 and change. And you're absolutely right. If we had put maybe a little more time in, your gun was absolutely capable of it.
Yeah.
The round was absolutely capable of it. You know, we had all those red flag warnings, and that kind of handicapped us as far as getting out. I've got my spots. I like to go shoot long range stuff. But when there's a red flag warning, you're tied to gun ranges.
Right.
And that Carson range, as nice as it is, it only goes out to 300.
Yeah.
So we did not have field time with you behind the gun going out past that.
When we were practicing at the range, I'm looking at 300 yards going,
I can get
within. Are you serious? Yeah. That's, how can you not get within that range of an animal? I mean, do it every year during archery season.
Right.
I don't know if that was my hubris talking or what, but you know, I was like, that's a long way. But that antelope proves me wrong.
I would say, one, that's terrain, and two, that's the species. I've had antelope bust me at 750 and take off at a dead sprint, and it's like, I was crawling.
With him, he never ran. He would just walk off. So we're like, well, he's not too worried about us. Maybe it was that sexy decoy we had there and the way you were wiggling it back and forth. Like,
That's because I was panting.
Like it was working a pole or something. But that was the other thing. I was watching some of those decoy videos before we went on the hunt. And some of these, I don't know if they're just like AI, you know, I don't know if it's what they're doing.
If it's real.
If it's real or not, if it's like a fake or something. But some of these folks with these decoys, like the one we had, these antelope are walking right to them, like coming up within 50 yards. Like, hey, what's that all about? So in my brain, being an idiot, I was like, oh, dude, that's what's going to happen. We're going to just put the decoy out there and they're just going to walk to us.
Well, I wouldn't call you an idiot, because when we were scouting and we had it, the buck that you wound up killing, when we initially found those.
You're right.
And we popped that. So for people listening, I'll kind of paint the mental picture here. It's an umbrella, and you slide the thing up the umbrella shaft or whatever.
Yeah.
It pops out and it looks like an antelope doe.
Yeah.
So it's not like a full body decoy or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's
carrying around.
Yeah. It's a little thing. When we were scouting and we got on that buck and we were kind of checking him out, wanted to get a better look at how good he was, we popped that thing out.
Yeah.
And I think they were initially at like 180. They got up and they closed another 60, 70 yards.
Yeah, they got into like 120.
They just walked straight towards the decoy.
You're right. I totally forgot that part.
Yeah, so it does work.
Yeah.
it just did not work
that day.
That day
on that buck.
Yep.
But he was pretty exceptional.
He was a really good buck. As it turns out, we carried that thing and did not actually wind up needing it, you know, when it counted.
When we harvested mine, when we finally got to a point where we were debating, like, this draw or that draw?
And
we
they're just in kinda, here somewhere.
Yeah, when we just kept sneaking up, and we had the decoy out.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you're like, get the gun up.
Yeah.
And I looked over your shoulder in the decoy, and there they were, like, right in front of us. But they were
feeding away.
Yeah, but their butts were to us, and they're feeding down that draw.
Wind,
everything,
vision, everything worked in our favor on
everything.
That. Yeah.
It was fantastic. It worked out perfectly.
Let's take a break, and then when we come back, I want to get into the shot, how you supported the gun during the shot, and we'll get into some of those offhand shooting positions, bags, tripods, etc.
Yeah.
Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, if you're just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry. If you missed the previous two segments, you can go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab, and the full segments, all of our past shows, everything is archived there. And if you're an Apple user, Apple Podcasts, just search for Nevada Backcountry, and you can check out all the previous episodes there. Getting back into what we were talking about, this antelope hunt, Dave was successful, killed a hell of a nice buck. We went through kind of, I guess, the 40,000 foot overview. And then we started talking about the really good buck we bumped on that opening morning. A little bit of discouragement until we found the next buck. Offhand shooting positions. Big shout out to Anthony at Reno Rifle Company. He sent me one of those, it's called a Triple Bravo, the Big Booty Bag.
And I love that name.
Yeah, it is a good one.
That's a great name.
But I got a bone to pick with you, Anthony, if you're listening. Literally this week, we get back and he releases a new, slightly smaller version called the Double Bravo Bag.
The Double Bravo Baby Booty.
The Baby Booty Bag, I guess.
Got
it. I don't know what the acronym is, but the bag that he sent me, really, really cool. You guys can go check him out at renoriflecoo.com. The fill in it, first off, I have a little sandbag thing.
Right, yeah.
And that I use under
heavy,
the...
heavy, yeah.
This thing, I don't know what he uses for fill.
I don't know. Something space age something.
Jim was absolutely right. I mean, that bag is probably, I don't know, 10, 12 inches, like a cube, and it doesn't weigh anything.
Nothing. I was amazed when you handed it to me. I was like, this is so cool. I mean, you can put it anywhere. And you
I threw it in my pack for the hunt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it worked out great for me because we were standing there 109 yards from him, and I set my sticks up and kind of fidgeting there, you know, again, because I was used to shooting from benches.
Right.
So I'm fidgeting there, and I got the bag. You know,
right.
I got the big booty bag, and I stuck it between my rib cage and my left arm to stabilize that
front arm.
Front arm.
Yep.
And boy, that just kind of like stopped the movement of the scope and everything. And that was a saving grace. And then
shooting stick
and the big booty bag on my arm, and just settled it on there and slowly let that trigger go. And that thing dropped like a sack of Jell-O.
Yeah. Now you were fortunate because you had the shooting sticks. We
yes.
had the bag.
Yeah.
You know, I've been on hunts before where you don't have those options.
Yeah.
So I want to get into some of those positions. First, I've been tinkering around with that bag at home, and holy smokes, tucking that thing between your tricep and your rib cage on that front arm, holding up the barrel end of the rifle, world of difference.
It is, yeah. It just stabilizes.
That's great. In years past, I've used the double wrap the sling around your front hand.
Right.
Kind of suck it back into your body. If at all possible, though, I avoid taking an offhand shot if I can.
Yeah. The tough part with that particular, where that animal was and where we were standing, the only shot I had was standing.
Oh, that's it.
If I got on my knees or I got prone, they're gone. They're over the other side.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not going to see them. Like, even standing up, we just saw their butts for a bit until they moved a little bit and they opened themselves up to us. But any other position, so that's another thing with rifle. You don't know what your opportunity is going to be.
Yep.
You know, we had no tree to kind of put the gun up on and kind of act as a shooting
stick. Oh, there's no tree in that unit.
There's nothing. I mean, unless it's the Hawa super duper mega light.
Super light, yeah.
Where I can stick it on a piece of blade of grass or something. So I was forced. If I didn't have my shooting sticks, it would have just been an offhand shot where the bag would have been priceless for me. But then, how do
I stabilize?
Yeah.
Well, and that's, Jim brought it up. He asked when he was on the show, he said, well, what's long range? And I answered, well, it's all dependent on your position, the distance, everything. He brought up at that shooting course they do, the one target that gives everybody fits is an 80-yard offhand standing shot. That was like their lowest hit percentage. Even, man, maybe a buck 50-ish offhand standing is a long poke with a rifle.
Yeah.
You got to manage the recoil. A couple things before I really started thinking like, okay, you know, there were those days where it was like, well, you just shoot offhand if that's the shot you get and that's what you do and you got to close the distance. There's a company called Quick Sticks that makes a product. I've used it on my trekking poles. It bolts onto them and it locks together. So you have like shooting sticks in a pinch. Before that, you can wrap like your index finger around the leg of a trekking pole and kind of hook your thumb out, set the fore end of the rifle on that.
Yeah.
Same thing with spotting scope tripods. You have an actual pair of shooting sticks.
Yeah.
With like a rubberized cradle up top.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That
the wife
was
got
awesome.
It for me.
Oh, she did.
Yeah, she picked that.
Shout out, Gina.
Yeah, thank you, Gina. Yeah, she grabbed those for me. Says, yeah, you might need these. When I did practice, I tried a couple standing shots.
Okay.
And at 50 yards, I was hitting the target and hitting in a pattern would put something down, no problem.
Okay.
At the 100 yards, not so much.
No.
Not so much. So
That's a poke. Yeah.
It is. And it was just, so not so much. Probably 5 shots. I think I hit good paper on 2 of them.
Okay.
You know, the rest were on the outskirts of the paper. So it was, you know, something I'm definitely going to be working on going forward. Because I really want to harvest something with the muzzle loader.
I know.
So that's going to be the big one. Those off-kilter shots that you don't know what opportunity you're going to have. I got to apologize to all the rifle hunters out there that all these years I'm like, I don't know why. There's not a huge amount of challenge in shooting something at 500, 600, 700 yards. I mean, but there is.
Oh, absolutely.
There absolutely is.
Best to worst, I'd go first and foremost, if I can get in a prone position and I've got a bipod on the gun, that's ideal. Then you're talking that like 600, 700 yard range, even on an animal. It's like, hey, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Next up from that would be sitting with like your pack in front of you and you've got the barrel rested on that. But again, those body dynamics change from sitting underneath the shade at the rifle range with bags and everything.
And it's totally flat to the target.
Yep.
You know, all of that shifts because, you know, a prone position shot where we're hunting.
Oh, it wouldn't have worked for you.
Never worked. And, you know, you've got sagebrush, depending on this, all kinds of things that can kind of put kibosh that one.
That's hands down the most stable. Next up would be the sitting with a pack. Third, I would go the index finger hooked thumb off a tripod leg or the trekking pole or something. Fourth, getting into like an unsupported kneeling position where that front elbow and front
knee.
Yep. And then last, the one I will avoid if at all possible is that offhand standing shot.
Yeah. Unless the animal's 50 or less.
Embedded, like we've talked before about shots with archery equipment, that bedded shot I don't like.
It's tough.
Yeah, you don't know exactly where the vitals are laying when it's on its side bedded.
And when they're laying down, sometimes you don't really see the angle at which they're laying down.
No.
They just look like a big glob laying there with a head. And you're like, all right, I can see its front legs and I'll put it there. But
with a rifle, though, I got no problem taking the bedded shot.
Yeah, yeah. Archery's different. Yeah, 100%. You got, there's a lot of bone when they're laying there. There's a whole lot of bone to slow things down.
And as we saw, rifle hunting's just a different animal. There are definitely complications with shot position and stuff. Yeah. Even if an animal's bedded, if you can get a bullet into that chest cavity, it's going to eviscerate everything. You're good to go. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go into the kill, I'll call it. We can go through that stock, and I want to get into the performance of the bullet, the caliber you used, and how effective it was. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
And we are back for the fourth and final segment of today's show on Nevada Backcountry. Want to give a shout out to Truck Envy. If you have anything on your truck you need before the hunt, get out there. I picked up some of those, the boards, you know, you put behind
running
your
boards.
Tire, the running boards. Those are on my truck, and I have them also on my UTV just for the in case factor, as well as they've got everything. I am picking up some airbags for my new truck.
Oh, the towing thing.
Yeah. So get out there, go see the boys at Truck Envy. They will dial you in.
I have slept under a camper shell from Truck Envy too many times to count. But let's get into the kill, harvesting the antelope.
Yeah.
I'll paint the picture here. We're getting discouraged.
Yes.
It was opening day. Which is crazy.
We're getting discouraged on opening day.
Yeah. It is what it is, man. When you're not seeing animals where you had seen animals.
Yes.
24 hours prior, you're kind of going, what in 40, the world?
40 years into hunting and you're still like, dude.
Where are they? We happen to pull out on a finger. We're glassing, doing the like, what the heck, man?
We're staring at four springs.
Yeah, going, and there's not an antelope in this entire country. What in the world? I happened to look up as we're backing out with the side-by-side, and there they were. They had moved slightly from the previous day, but not too far. So we glassed them up. We said, hey, let's go after it. We get over there. We leave the muzzleloader at the side-by-side.
Yes.
We pulled up. We're kind of coming up, and I thought, okay, before we get over this next little knob and this ridge line and skyline ourselves, let's get out, work our way around these rocks and take a peek. Well, I thought we were going to take a peek, but thank God you had the gun, your shooting stick. We had enough to get it done,
but
I did not think we were going to be killing an antelope on that, I'll call it a stalk, but really it was just kind of us checking out the terrain.
Yeah, that's what it started out as, just us checking the terrain and kind of having a good vantage point to peek up and over that rise instead of skylining ourselves, you know, and check it out through those rocks.
Yes.
And we didn't see anything. And then that whole backside of those rocks gave us this really nice area to walk along and stay out from skylining ourselves.
Yeah.
So our brains just went straight to the hunt and we're like, okay, let's just keep doing this. And we creep over and take a look and, because we had no idea where they were, because this area, it's so deceiving. And as most of us know, being in Nevada and being, you know, longtime hunters out here, that some of these big wide open plains that we think are like, oh, we can see for miles, we'll see everything.
Pool table flat.
Right. Yeah. It's not. Everything's just like these little bit rolling hills for miles, 2-3 miles. And there's animals in those little itty bitty little rolls and draws, and that's where, you know, you were talking earlier, we just need to change position, get a different view, look again. Change position, get a view, look again.
As it so happens, we walked up and we had talked about too, because I had said, well, they're either in this one or that one, a farther away. And I thought they were in that farther one. Well, as it happens, we walk up and I see four white butts glaring.
Yeah. And we had just skylined ourselves. We thought, that's done.
Yep. They never picked their heads up.
Never.
I guess we're sneakier than I thought.
Yeah. All that archery training. Just
being quiet.
Super quiet.
So we get up there. You said it last segment. That was all I said to you. I said, get the gun up. You got it up. You had to slide a little bit to get an angle and yes. actually see the buck.
Yeah, I had to probably move another, you know, 5-10 yards closer and off to the right because how he was positioned, like I said, all I could see was the very top of his butt.
Okay,
I didn't know where his body was or what he was doing, so I had to kind of get myself over to a position where I could actually see the animal without triggering the three ladies that were
hanging out,
you know, 60 yards to our right. It all worked out. They were super busy eating. They were just like, they found a honey hole of the Indian rice grass or something, and they were just mowing.
Yeah, no idea we were there. And man, you did great. Took your time, got set up, and 308.
Yeah.
That was what you're using.
Hawa 1500 308.
And what was it? 150 grain bullets?
150 grain bullet was that.
Deadliest mushroom in the woods, Remington Corlock.
Yeah. I love the Corlocks. My best friend's father, that's all he ever shot. To me, it's the best bullet ever because
that's
because Raymond shot it.
I hate to break it to you, but
I know there's a lot better. It's just it is always stuck in my brain. It's like, well, Raymond
killed a lot of stuff.
Killed a lot of stuff with these Corlocks, and that's just what I'm going to use. And so I did. But, you know, I picked the 308 for one. The ammunition's fairly priced.
And
you can get it anywhere.
Yep.
It is a very popular round.
Yes.
And it can reach out there the distances I need. You had told me before that, you know, it has a pretty good drop to it at a certain distance, but you can still reach out there at 600 or so yards. I'm like,
yep,
I'll practice, but that's about my max it'll be someday. But that's why I picked the 308. It was that or a 30-06. And I just really loved the feel of that Hawa 1500, 308. The wife can shoot it. She's taken animals with it.
That's my wife's caliber choice. Yeah, she's got a 308 too.
So she's told me now that I have to get another 308 because the one that I shot that antelope with is hers.
No chance. You put a body on it, it's yours.
Yeah, she's like, that's that one's mine.
So, I'll fight that fight for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so
I like the reticle that's in your scope. I do not like, I have one of those, it's got like a Tremor reticle, Horus reticle. It makes it so you don't have to dial when you're shooting long ranges. Oh. I'll call it like a Christmas tree for people that are familiar with it.
Yeah.
But I got to be real, hunting with that stuff is like, there's too much going on. I have a very similar reticle on that 7 mag where it's just some, they're called stadia lines, but I think
I call them hashtags.
Which my dad does too.
Yeah, like total. Like
hash marks.
Like I'm a 12-year-old kid.
So it's got a few lines in there, and other than that, it's basically a duplex reticle with a few drop marks on there.
Yeah.
It's just uncluttered, simple to use.
Yeah.
And we've talked before, even though I like going out, shooting out to long distance, 400 in hunting, I'm good with. I don't need that Horus or Tremor or they got all kinds of names. I don't need it.
I was just really happy with how that 308 performed. And
where were the crosshairs when you squeezed the trigger?
So since we had sighted that thing in at 200 yards and we had shot it at 100 and it was like 3 inches high at 100, I just put the animal's chest into a 4 quadrants and I just kind of hovered it in between like the lower third of the body.
Okay.
The lower third of his body. And I just looked for his opposite front leg because I know he was quartering away from us.
Yep.
Used his opposite front leg to finish out the rest of my crosshairs, the bottom of my crosshair, and then just put the center right bottom third. And then just like you've taught me, at the end of my exhale, just keep squeezing. And then she ripped.
Boom.
And
bullet went right where you were aiming.
Oh, man. Yeah. It was that thing just dropped. And then typical antelope fashion, it rolls and then it stands up and then it does its Michael Jackson moonwalk thing.
Yeah.
Backwards and falls back. And that was it.
The insurance shot.
Yeah, then you said the insurance shot because we were kind of walking up on it and he kind of brought his head up and you said, do an insurance shot. And I was like, what? Yeah. Is there a premium? What are you talking about? You got to pay something here? And I said, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. And then we shot him at like, I don't know, 50 yards.
Yeah, just put one, anchor him there. I was worried about him doing a death sprint over the cliff down the canyon.
Either direction would have not been solid.
No.
For us. No. For us in relation to retrieval.
That was the antelope hunt. Fantastic experience. Thank you for the memories.
Yes.
Before we end here, I'm looking at the time and I want to make sure we get this in. Let's do a 180 degree switch. Birds.
Oh, yes. Man, there were a lot of chucker.
Yes.
And huns.
Huns.
That is the bird I need this year.
We've talked about that. Yep.
It was wild. So when we were on that darn stalk, you know, moving up on those antelope, Henry and I are standing there kind of in those rocks. In between my feet, there's this little bush. And all of a sudden, seven of these egg-sized chucker come running out of the bush. This is the end of August.
Yeah.
This must have been third hatch.
Fresh. I mean,
fresh
suckers,
little
yeah.
guys. I mean, they weren't any bigger than a weeble wobble. And they come shooting out of the bush from my feet right into the rocks. And then Henry's standing in to my left, and you have the mom runs over your boots.
Yeah. She was right there. Didn't flush, just ran.
No, and they all ran into the rocks, and then they all took off. But
have you ever had that experience where you pull up next to a car, you're on a hill or something, and they start moving, and your brain thinks that your car's like rolling backwards?
Yes, yes.
That was the experience, because I looked down, and it was like the ground was just moving. I got that kind of like, whoa, what's happening? Yeah. And then I realized it's those little chicks running everywhere.
It was wild. And we had birds. We were listening to chucker all over the place, and we were watching chucker in just about every rock outcropping that we came across.
It's going to be a good
year. Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic year. We are going to go over the chucker forecast, which should be coming out here pretty soon.
You checked earlier today, right?
Yeah, okay. I was checking earlier today, and it's coming up on its final approvals and stuff. But we're going to be talking about it.
Hey, thank you, everybody, sincerely for tuning in to Nevada Backcountry this weekend. Let's get out of here.
Let's do it.